on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
God, I can't believe it.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Welcome to another edition of
Happiness to be found, even in the darkest of times.
System probably contains a new data encryption algorithm. You'll never get in there.
Yes, and welcome to another edition of the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Rose, the show that talks all things mental health, emotional well-being, and what we can do to make us that little bit happier. Now, joining me on today's show, my guest in 2018 found herself being rushed to hospital after collapsing at work. After a stay in ICU and then remaining in hospital during her recovery, she says her days were made easier by the lucky and rare views she witnessed from her hospital bed. The beautiful mountains and woodlands of Mid Wales surrounding the area somehow gave her hope and perspective. Seeing the trees, green space, and the view of the natural world reminded her to let go of all things that were unimportant and trivial. Instead, she began to focus on all that matters: life, love, family, friends, and nature. Upon discharge, she knew the road to recovery was going to be a long and interesting one. It was during this period that she kept reminding herself of what she had discovered whilst laying in that hospital bed. She needed to be closer to nature to fully heal herself. Step by step, she got from the front door to the garden, to the drive, to the street, and then finally up the street into the woods. The woods became her sanctuary. Soon she was managing long, slow walks surrounded by the trees and the birds. She felt supported, happy, and able to breathe. Her lungs, still stiff and creaking from the damage done, began to inflate with more ease and joy at the fresh forest air. And so began her research and practice into the power of healing in nature. To find out more about nature's healing properties and how we can all benefit from being outside a whole lot more than we currently are, I'd like to welcome to the show Ruth Mortimer from Forest Clouds Nature Therapy. Ruth, how are you?
Hello there.
It's so pleasing to have you on the show, Ruth. Obviously, I got carried away and my intro was so lengthy, but I didn't want to take away from actually what you do and your journey. So please, in the style that we are accustomed to here on the Happiness Algorithm, please share a bit about what you do and a bit of the backstory that sort of led to this journey and your practice.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. Really a pleasure to be able to share a bit of my story, really. So, yeah, absolutely. As you said, I like to think I've always enjoyed my time in nature. And definitely throughout my life, I have sought out meditation and mindfulness and yoga, different self-care practices, as I've been aware that was perhaps needed. I mean, years ago, I lived overseas. I was very lucky. I was living and working over in Japan and then in Vietnam, and particularly in Vietnam, where the city I lived in was incredibly busy and hectic. Going to meditation practices and yoga really helped me find some sort of peace of mind. So it's something I've always kind of been aware of. But yeah, absolutely. A couple of years ago, I was living in the beautiful mountains and woodlands of Wales, managing a campsite over there, and really out of the blue became critically ill with a severe respiratory illness that was then starting into sepsis as well. And I remember they wheeled me up to the intensive care unit thinking, crikey, this is going to be interesting. And really obviously being very, very scared. And as they wheeled me up there and my bed just happened to be by the window, very lucky, because I think most hospitals that wouldn't be the case. It just happened to be that the hospital in Aberystwyth has beautiful, beautiful views. And yeah, my bed was right by the window of the mountains and the trees. And I just immediately had this sense of I would be okay, whatever that meant, I would be okay. And it really settled me. And I think that helped so much in so many ways. So yeah, as you said in your intro, that's sort of where it all began. I luckily did recover after a few weeks in the hospital. And then had to kind of give up everything. I sort of, you know, lost my job and my accommodation. And sadly, actually, even in my relationship that I was in at the time, it was all just such a big life-changing event, I guess, for everyone. And it saw me having to come back here to Essex. Luckily, I had that option to come back and live with my parents and begin that road to recovery, first of all, physically, but then mentally. And I knew from the beginning, I knew even when I was in the hospital, that I was going to need mental recovery and support, whatever shape that might come in. And I'm lucky where my parents live, although it's a fairly sort of urban area, they don't live very far from a beautiful woodland. And I just knew that as I got myself sort of walking and moving again, that it would be so good for me to get up to those woodlands. I just didn't quite realize how much that would help. And I'm really, really noticed the difference again, is sort of you were saying, is the introduction, both physically and just in the breathing, because I was really having to work on healing my lungs. They were still quite severely damaged at that stage, and there was still an infection going on, and I was still in and out of hospital at the time. And just even being in the middle of the woods and the nature, how much that helped me on that physical level. But yeah, through that, I guess that started to make me think about the healing power of nature and what that meant for me and how that was so important. But it wasn't until a little bit later when I was finally ready to try and get some work, and I just applied for a part-time job that luckily happened to be in the visitor centre up in the woodlands.
No way.
And in my head, yeah, it was just meant to be a job for a job's sake, really, just sort of try to get me back on my feet and start to get used to that and put myself out there, really. And for the job interview, I had to propose an event idea. And I remember thinking about wellness in the woods and had visions of sort of Tai Chi and yoga and exercise out in the woods, which I guess was informed by my time living out in Asia, where a lot of in the cities, in the parks, you see people early morning out there doing Tai Chi and aerobics all in big groups and out in the parks. And there's something quite wonderful about that. And so I kind of had that in my head. But as I was Googling it, I stumbled across this thing called Shinrin Yoku, which is forest bathing. And that's kind of where it all began.
Well, it's an incredible story to go from, and I suppose for many, you know, we take life for granted sometimes, and we are in this sort of groove and we're in this kind of routine and life is just sort of plodding along or ticking along. And then to experience what you went through and, you know, in ICU and a really dangerous position, to then reconnect with almost the simplicity of our existence, the very essence, the black and white nature of it, of between life and death, and then connect on such a deeper level of purity and presence and time as well. You
Definitely.
Said before, and obviously living in Japan, wow, I mean, that's amazing, and Vietnam, that you were, I was going to say, that way inclined, that it was a part of your practice anyway, meditation and yoga. When you contrast those practices before what you've been through and your practice now, is there a difference? And I suppose I'm going to add something into this, but I don't want the question to be too leading. I think sometimes we, and I'm not suggesting you did, but I'm curious to the answer. Sometimes we, in Western culture, we adopt these practices of meditation and yoga and be quite present. But sometimes our sort of busy brain can compromise or rob us of that. So we're not as present. Is what you've been through enabled you to really connect and ground yourself in those practices now or not?
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. Yes, that's an absolutely brilliant question. And really lovely to think about actually and reflect on. I think you're absolutely right. I think I was lucky that some of my grounding and knowledge, you know, previously, I knew that it was a good idea to do those practices, especially when you're very busy and stressed out. There was an element more of a, oh, I should go to meditation. I should go to yoga. And you may not always prioritize it, but it happens and you recognize that it helps. There's definitely something that's shifted that now feels like it's not a should, but it's a need. I feel that need. And if I don't do it, because I still do, you know, as I get much more into sort of normal routine of life again, I you know, still, as anyone does, get swept up with, you know, the daily things you've got to do and then forget the practices. But it feels like a real embodiment of that need. And for a while, it was funny, and you know, and I've, you know, nature's helped me, but I also sought out yoga therapy, and I did talking therapy, and lots of different ways to ensure that I supported myself. And again, lucky that I had that knowledge to seek that out from the very beginning of this journey, really. But I have found, for a while, it felt almost like there was something wrong with me that I felt like I couldn't do as much as I used to be able to do before. Or that if I did do too much, then I would need to sort of find those things to switch off and do my yoga practice, go to nature, do my forest bathing practice. And for a while, I kind of carried that as if it was almost, I guess, a bruise or a scar. And then what I realized is actually, I think what that is actually a real embodiment of realizing that I really do need to take care now. And that's really important to me. And actually that, rather than that bruise or that scar being something that's negative, it's a real positive, because it actually feels like a real strong mental and physical need to do things that help me, that are that self-care act. And that almost, that mental knowing that you should do it has become almost a body thing as well. And that I know I have to do it, otherwise my body will tell me otherwise, you know, it will tell me that, well, you've pushed it too far, or you've not engaged in that self-practice. So it's really interesting, rather than that feeling like that's something that slowed me down, it actually feels like that self-care, that self-protection is so embedded now that I kind of can't escape it. It can scream at me if I don't listen to it. And actually there's something really lovely about that. It's like a real inner knowing that I never had before.
And do you think that we can reach that state of knowing and embodiment without going through significant trauma as you did?
I mean, my first answer is I want to say yes. I don't want it to have to be that you have to go through something absolutely horrendous in order to find it. And equally, people that have gone through something absolutely horrendous, it depends what support they've got and what their journey is. You know, each person is so individual as to what they can find from that. But I think we each have our own, I guess, trauma in different ways, you know, and I think everyone is carrying something that they've been through, you know, of, you know, different perhaps magnitude if you were to compare it. But I think actually on your own personal level, we all have. But I think that it really probably is absolutely possible for anyone to move through to that and move through to that embodiment of it. But I think there's so many factors in there. Again, I know that I've been really lucky that, you know, I had some knowledge and awareness beforehand, and I also had support, and I was able to know what support to seek out. And I guess I'm fully aware there's a lot of people that don't have that privilege, that don't have that easy accessible support either. So very aware and very conscious whenever I speak about this. And also really aware that, you know, I don't feel like I'm sat here on some pedestal going, I found the meaning of life. Definitely not. And there's definitely some days that, you know, are still really tough. And, you know, this year, I think in particular, 2020 has presented that all to us, no matter where any of us were on our, you know, journeys, paths. But there is something I think really lovely and innate about what nature can do for us that doesn't ask too much of us, that doesn't ask too deep a psychological understanding or even necessarily a deeper psychological exploration. Nature is quite simple, doesn't really ask much of us when we are sat in it. And we are essentially nature, and it's almost accessing our original human nature, where we would have been sat out, you know, in the woods, you know, out on the mountains, existing there and doing all the things that I practice in a forest bathing session and guide people to do in a forest bathing session. We would have been doing that naturally, you know, sensing with our smell, sense of smell or ears or sight in a very different way to what we do now when we're just, I don't know, all in our state of doing, of right, I've got to get somewhere, I've got to do something, I've got to walk the dog, I must jog 10,000 steps, or, you know, it's a sort of a different way of being. Yeah, I don't know if that totally answered your question.
No, it does. I think that I too hope and believe that actually it isn't a case of experiencing trauma to then unlock or connect with a deeper part of self that that enables us to simplify our existence. I think that we all have the ability to do that in the same way that I think that we've become quite hectic and busy creatures in a very subtle way that the outside world ends up demanding so much of us. And I suppose it goes back to an earlier point you made around, you know, there is a need now, as opposed to that should, a need almost of nourishing and tending to self in the same way. And as you were speaking, I almost thought, you know what, it's as important as feeding yourself from a nutritional perspective, you know, that we know the importance of food. And if we didn't eat, we would struggle, understandably so. And I suppose that when we're committing those gestures to self is really crucial. And I suppose for those that have not gone through a difficult period or trauma, but as you say, I think each and every one of us go through somewhere on that spectrum of difficulty and trauma. Life itself is the problem, I always feel. That for many of us, it's continuing the investment we make. So reminding ourselves. So starting, you use the wonderful phrase there, journey. It's being on that journey and knowing where we are and recognizing that these practices are so important to us. I think the contrast or the challenge comes because we live in quite a hedonistic, indulgent lifestyle, indulgent life, that it's about instant gratification. So I think sometimes the pace at which meditation should be, or the pace at which we connect with nature, is much slower than what the world asks of us. And I think sometimes people can be compromised by that and find it difficult.
Definitely. And I think also we're still so goal orientated and result orientated in general, this sort of setup. And, you know, we can use the language journey, which I think does describe it quite well. But I think it's also important to really let go of there being a destination on that journey. And I, you know, I've definitely got confused with that at times. And certainly when I was on the I need to get better, both physically and mentally, I thought there would come a point when I was completely better, 100% healed, and that was it, perfection, you know. And then even becoming a forest bathing guide as well, I thought, well, then I probably have to be the absolute embodiment of all of this and never have a bad day. And of course, that's completely unrealistic. And unachievable. But I think we can, you know, approach these different things, whether we choose to go to meditation or yoga or whatever that might be, with perhaps an aim or a goal of what we should be achieving by the end of that, or a certain amount of sessions. And I'm not sure that really is helpful, because it is, as you say, quite unrealistic, and it will be from day to day, and kind of letting go of that and bringing in that compassion for ourselves. And again, that's what I really love about time in nature is because you start to see that, you know, everything has its pattern, its rhythms, you know, its changes, and things come and go. And that's all part of the natural cycle. And just the same as us as humans, again, we are animals and nature, and we will have, you know, good days, bad days, different challenges, and days when we think, you know, we've got it all sorted, and other days when we definitely don't. And that is all okay. And I think that's something that's really easily forgotten now. And even though there's this wonderful, wonderful, I think, sharing of more and more resources and ideas and conversations being opened through, you know, the medium of social media and people sharing that, I still think that that can promote the idea of an ideal. And really, maybe the ideal is letting go of all of that and just literally just being. So yeah, I think it's quite an interesting thing to be considering and talking about now.
I agree with that 100%. I think that I've said on previous shows that, you know, social media is a blessing and a curse. It enables us to access individuals or parts of the world that perhaps we wouldn't have the opportunity to. But equally, it can be quite dangerous and emotionally provocative in so many ways. And almost in a very subtle fashion, force a disconnect with what's important. And I think you said some really lovely, I was making some notes as you were talking there, that about there's this, almost a simplicity in nature, but what nature teaches us that is that things, they come and go. And it's part of that natural cycle. And you're right that periods of crisis will evolve. We will come out the other side. We don't stay in that fixed state. And I think connecting that or aligning that with what nature can teach us and show us is so powerful. So for those that are not aware of what forest bathing is, share with us, you know, the not the mechanisms, again that sounds too clinical, because and it goes against the grain. Let me put it simply, what's forest bathing?
What is it? What the hell is it? Sure. Well, I suppose I always start this with what it's not, and it's not swimming. It's not getting our bathing suits out swimming through the woods, and it's not running around naked in the woods either. it's a practice that originated in Japan, actually only in the 80s, the early 80s, it was really coined, the term forest bathing. The Japanese word shinrin-yoku translates into literally bathing in the atmosphere of the trees of the forest. And it is essentially a normally a 2 to 3 hour session in small groups where you're sort of wandering rather than really walking through the forest. You don't tend to travel very far, and often you stay in a couple of locations. And your guide will invite you on a series of exercises that are all designed to awaken the senses and connect to nature. Incredibly simple and gentle. So it'd be things like exploring what you can hear, what you can smell, perhaps textures and exploring different textures. And it's all, yeah, incredibly simple, and perhaps things that we might have done if we were fortunate enough as kids to spend time out in nature. But as adults, we've perhaps forgotten, or we worry about getting dirty or something being, I don't know, dangerous or something like that. It does is through that sort of time period, as you're starting to connect more to your senses and connecting to nature, you're starting to then put your nervous system into the rest and digest state, as everything is kind of operating as it was designed to do, rather than that constant flight or fight stress state that most of us are in probably 90% of the time in our daily lives at the moment. What I always say is it's ultimately connecting back to sort of the animal human self. Getting your body to work in the way it was designed to do. When we spent time in nature, when we were reliant out there for hunting and tracking our food and you know, materials and resources and shelter, we'd have used all those skills very innately to know right what weather is going to be, or are the berries fresh, or what animal has passed here, and all as our machine, essentially our body and mind as a machine, thinking of it in that those terms, as we said, mechanisms, would have been designed to operate on that level, and therefore working quite efficiently, which means then our nervous system would be operating as it should be as well, and only really ramping up when there was threat, or perhaps excitement, or a hunt, a chase. But then it would then come back to equilibrium when you were sat around the fire, or just sat, watching, observing. So it's all designed, and there's been a lot of science out in Japan specifically, although more and more around the world now, and here in the UK, I think Derby University is doing more and more research into the practice of forest bathing. But out in Japan, they've got, I think it's something like 60 forest therapy centres out there now. And what they will do with participants is actually take a whole lot of measurements before they go out on a session. So heart rate, blood pressure, even cortisol levels, so your stress levels. And even taking blood tests and starting to measure the immune system and the T cells production. Wow. So they do that before and after a session. And then they've even looked at following that up, weeks after a session to see the effects. And there's some wonderful, wonderful research coming out that, it's accessible. You can sort of hop on the internet and find it. And a couple of lovely books have been written as well now about the wonderful effects of forest bathing. So any time in nature is beneficial. But particularly this sequence of exercises that's really kind of immersing you deeper and deeper into nature and ultimately into yourself. And I think for me, and for what participants have said, is it makes it quite a lovely, accessible way of being mindful and meditation and becoming very present in the here and now, and just switching off that chatter of the brain for a little bit. Without necessarily being asked to sit in a room, cross your legs and think of nothing, which is what the typical fear of what, typical meditation might be. A meditation teacher will tell you it's not quite that, of course. But I think that can be sometimes be a lot to ask of someone, especially when you're particularly stressed out or in an anxious state. Mm. Whereas actually out in nature, for a lot of people, it's just that little bit more accessible. And the big thing that I emphasize in all my sessions as well, which relates to what we were just saying, is that there's no goal or objective in a forest bathing session either. So, everyone will take something different from it, and that's okay. And some people go home afterwards and sleep like they've never slept before. And some people just feel very energized. And it can be quite sort of a profound spiritual experience, emotional experience, or equally it can just be a really nice way to spend a few hours. Which I really like. Again, I really like that there's no should and no pressure, and everything's optional as well. So if there's an invite that doesn't feel quite right, or for some reason someone isn't quite comfortable doing, then that's absolutely fine. They can wander along or just go and sit under a tree for a bit. And even being given that permission seems to be incredibly invaluable for people and empowering, just giving them that space, that headspace and breathing space, really.
I mean, you said just before you close there, in terms of that permission, I think that's such a underrated word, that permission to others and permission to self to fully surrender to the practice. It was fascinating to sort of, you give sort of a brief overview of what it is, and I've got to share when you were saying about the actual practice and you said that, the sessions last 2 to 3 hours, my immediate response was, oh, that's a long time. Like, that's outrageous, isn't it? Immediately I'm thinking, cool, how do I have to, but equally from a meditation perspective as well. I think Kabat-Zinn said that, we've all got 40 minutes. We've all got 40 minutes to practice. And yet this current state in this world constantly squeezes time. It was interesting in the beginning of sort of when we went into lockdown as well, I really felt this seismic shift of recognizing that I was quite time poor, to then all of a sudden feeling like I was, an abundance of time. I was time rich. Yeah. There was, wow, this is what 24 hours in a day actually should feel like. as you know, as you're saying there, and immediately I'm thinking, oh, 2 to 3 hours. There's this split in me that says, oh, I'd love to just 2 to 3 hours just to be present, reflecting, walking in the forest. And then this other part that says, you haven't got 2 to 3 hours. You know, I'm sure there's things you've got to be doing.
So true. And it's funny because even when I set last year when I was, sort of starting up more in Essex, I was doing the 2 to 3 hours and didn't even think too much about it because I guess my rhythm of life had been quite different, and also that was quite the standard session time designed to really let you move from the different states into that rest and digest, and having that time really makes that difference. But it was funny, I mean I had the same experience as you in lockdown and really relished that time and how time slowed down for me. For some people that I know that could have been difficult too, but yes, for me I felt I really enjoyed it. But at the end of lockdown, when I started to promote my sessions again, I suddenly got really worried about them being 2 to 3 hours. I was like, oh, is that too long? And it's all our different attitudes about it, definitely. And what is interesting is normally participants will get to the end of a session and be surprised that that's the end of the session, because although they feel like they have slowed down, they had no concept that it was 2 to 3 hours, and are surprised how quickly it went, and often thought, oh, I wonder, 2 to 3 hours, that's quite long, how's that going to feel? And at the end of the session have almost lost that sense of time and really enjoyed that. But also interestingly, the other Monday last week, I did a short event for Southeast and Central Essex Mind, who were doing Mindful Monday. And I did just an hour's taster session that people could come and join for free and just get a bit of a sense of it. Which I thought was a lovely way to introduce people. But I had a little worry beforehand of, oh, is an hour enough for them to really get any benefit? And worried how that would feel for people. And even at the end of the hour, of course, it was only a taster and it wasn't a full immersion. But at the end of the hour, even then, there were still people that were saying they really noticed the difference, how it really relaxed them, their mind had slowed down. And it was just a real good reminder for me that whilst a traditional forest bathing session will be 2 to 3 hours, depending on, you know, where you are and what's going on, but essentially any of us, even if we just go and sit in nature, whether that's a garden or under a tree somewhere, even for just, you know, 10, 20 minutes, there's still going to be incredible benefits. So as much as, yes, I think it's important to put aside that time, equally, we can probably all put aside 5 minutes, even just stand by the window and look up at the clouds if we can.
Yeah. I think the part that we've lost is that belief that we don't have the time to invest in self. And I always say that I was sharing this with somebody the other day, and I'll say it now, that I think it was 1st of July that they banned smoking in the UK. And it was important to do so. Of course it was. You know, there was huge health benefits that came off the back of it. However, it made me think, did we lose something as well? Now, I'm not a smoker, I've never been a smoker, but essentially what the smoker had or has, if they're you know, somebody still smoking, is this sort of time, this self-protected time. You know, for multiple times a day, they will step outside and for, I don't know, 5 or so minutes that they're sort of sucking on that cancer stick, they're just being, they're just thinking, they're reflecting, they're pondering. And I think for us non-smokers, we don't take that opportunity. We don't take that opportunity to pop out for a thinking break. But I'm going to start this revolution and say we must all, even if, you know, we can't commit to the 2 or 3 hours to begin with, because I suppose sometimes there's that hint of discomfort it causes, but we have to start somewhere, don't we? Like you say, if we can step out and find a garden to sit in or look up at the trees or the clouds for 5 minutes, we can all do that. That's got to be a starting point, hasn't it?
And the irony being, actually, if you can go and do that, you know, especially when looking at something like a traditional sort of office worker, I guess now some perhaps working from home in front of their computer all day, if you can just take even that 5 minutes to just step outside or even looking out the window, when you come back to your work, if you're literally looking on that basis, you'll be more productive and more efficient having had that short break. And that's sort of the irony of it. But we're so scared or so trained not to do that because that's, I know, inefficient, not productive, or we haven't got time. Mm. And the irony is that actually sort of the slower you go, you're often more productive. And then I always remember this back to when I was working very briefly at a cafe that was also a Buddhist center and ran meditations and mindfulness activities. And in the morning, I would have to open up and put out all the chairs and tables. And on the mornings, I felt a bit stressed and worried about how busy it was going to be and all this other stuff. I'd be rushing around and then maybe I'd drop something or wouldn't do something quite right or I'd forget something. There were some mornings when I was able to plug back into that sort of that more meditative state of mind. And I thought, I'm going very slowly here, but it doesn't matter. I'm just going to place this all nicely and enjoy, you know, lifting this chair slowly and, you know, and sort of doing it almost in a mindful way.
Mm.
And then when I would look up at the clock, I'd always done it quicker than the mornings I was rushing around.
Oh, wow.
I always thought that was interesting. And I try and remember that as much as I can, because I thought that was a real example.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is obviously something that we all have the opportunity to do. It's those mundane tasks that we often push against or resist sometimes that we can utilize as a mindfulness practice, that, you know, whether it be brushing our teeth or getting ready for work, like you say, putting chairs out, the methodical nature or repetitive nature of these tasks offer so much, but we can often miss them. So we should most certainly do that. I think, Ruth, we should go to your first song because it's quite apt. And it's quite timely to go into this. So stick with us here on The Happiness Algorithm. I'm joined by Ruth Mortimer, and this is her first song choice.
Supercharged.
Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. I'm joined by Ruth Mortimer, and that was her first song choice. That was Shinrin Yoko, Enter Shikari. Ruth, great song choice, and obviously very apt for the show as well.
Yes. I've actually got a friend, Connor, to thank for that. I collaborated with Connor. He runs something called Conscious Breath, where he does breath work and sound healing. And we collaborated last year to do a sort of full forest immersion where we did a couple of hours of forest bathing. And I led the people back to around the fire circle just as the sun was setting and the bats were flying overhead. And he did an hour of a sound bath of all sort of more sort of natural sounds from the forest. And it was a really beautiful night, and hopefully do more of those next year if things allow. But he introduced me to that song, and I wouldn't normally be listening to Enter Shikari. I think I might have prejudged them, but that song was absolutely perfect. And I often listen to it as I'm in my car on the way to a forest bathing session now, just to get me in the zone.
Well, it is. It takes you on sort of a journey all the way through the song. I thought it's an amazing, amazing piece of music. You mentioned Connor there as well. And interestingly, I had a breath guy, or what he calls himself, the breath guy, Richie Bostock, on a few weeks ago. And for me, hence why I wanted to have you on the show, Ruth, because we're seeing so much more practice around breath and sound and nature therapy. What do you put that down to? Why are we seeing sort of this exponential growth in these sort of more organic fields?
I think it's really interesting, actually. I, in a really simple way, I think it's just that we're craving being human again. I think that we've come so far away, or disconnected so far away from what our human nature was designed to be, what our bodies and mind were designed to be. And, you know, we're seeking out more and more, you know, as the wellness industry expands in many different ways. But there's so much to sift through in that wellness industry, as it were, you know, from fantastic, wonderful stuff going on, of course, but also a lot of confusing offerings, perhaps some people doing it for lots of different reasons, and equally, you know, a lot of cynicism out there as well about it all. And I think it's trying to sift through all that can be quite difficult as a person who's perhaps seeking support or help in any way. And I think as we get more and more disconnected from our sort of our human tribes, our community, our nature, the more there's something in us that is an inner seeking of that and how to access that. And I think there is a huge growth now in, when I say basic, I don't mean it's basically, you know, everyone has got, you know, these skills and studied to be able to guide people on that. But essentially, I think it is about kind of bring it back to basic ways of being that we've just forgotten. And I think we were craving it more and more in the last few years, and I think that will continue until perhaps there's a huge shift. But then this year has probably even shaken that up, you know, some more. The same, I think I connect it to, you know, there's more and more awareness of what perhaps nature needs, you know, from us. And what, you know, the earth needs, from the environment, climate change. You know, when we've become so far away from what our original existence was as part of nature, in balance with nature, to create sort of sustainable balance. And, you know, if you go back to people that really lived, you know, on the land, and there's, you know, few pockets still left in the world where people are still doing that, it is much more about only taking what you need, and having respect and honor and reverence for everything in nature, including our own bodies and minds as well. And, you know, a lot of ancient traditions are steeped in that and steeped in nature, and whether their narrative is through spirits in nature or through storytelling of the ancient ways, to you know, shamanic practices and healing practices that are often, again, all about essentially just being a human animal, part of nature rather than master of nature. So I think there, as the disconnect gets bigger, the inner pull gets bigger. And I think it's difficult times, but also really exciting that more and more of these practices are coming up. And, you know, it can be easy to perhaps get stuck in the despair and fear for the future. But equally, I think there's an awful lot of hope and new movements of the old ways coming up. And I think that's how we kind of all get through, both on a personal level, but on a community level, and hopefully on a planetary level as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, as you said there, that, you know, you wrestled over the word basic, and I sort of started with my question because I was going to use the word simple, and I didn't want it to sound disrespectful, but it is about the simplicity and the basic aspect of it that offers so much because of the complicated world in which we live in. So if we can revisit that, we're almost, you've said this a couple of times, I love this phrase, rest and digest. It's almost we're recalibrating our system, and that's what sort of nature does offer us in abundance. It's statement after statement, because you also said about taking what you need. I was like, wow, yeah, if ever there was I can't see a truer statement that could be said. Again, it goes against what we touched on earlier, that this society and cultural abundance that we have at our disposal, often we can lose sight of actually what we need and take more or over consume. Like we said with social media as well, we can over consume in the world of social media, and then it becomes counterproductive or disadvantage our sense of balance and well-being.
Absolutely. And I'm no expert historian or anything like that, but I know that, you know, a lot of people and experts will put that big shift back down to, you know, years and years ago with sort of the agricultural revolution of how we started to change our relationship with the land, and that ultimately was then how we changed our relationship with each other as a community, going from, you know, sort of perhaps a tribal and in exchange system to going into sort of lords of the land, masters and workers. And with that changed our sort of community and our sort of our tribal connections. And then that's sort of when we then started to even change our relationship with the land and then with ourselves. And so I guess part of me says, let's all just go and live in caves again. I'm not sure that's quite the solution, but
it just brought to mind, actually, I remember reading something once about how, obviously originally we were nomadic, we moved around, so nature and its organic cycle, as you said earlier, encouraged us to move where we could, where we needed to nourish and nurture ourselves through food, where crops would grow, etc. And then when we started to sort of remain in situ, then we started trading, then, you know, they had potatoes and they had onions, and then that forced this sort of economical growth culturally, which obviously brought with it positives, but equally it disadvantaged us in many ways as well. And so, yeah, I think it's fascinating, that aspect of our evolution, our emotional and social and psychological development at that stage. But going back to what is important is I think, and as you've said on the show, now more than ever is crucial that we understand where we come from and what we need. The forest bathing itself, of it, over that, you said that there are not necessarily activities, but there are practices that you do during that period as well. Am I right in thinking, and we'll dip into those, but I've also seen that part of the practice, or the closing of the session, there's a forest tea, is that right?
Yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Very traditionally, there's a little tea ceremony, and particularly traditionally, that might be foraged items that create the tea, or certainly natural, herbal tea that comes from the land. And there's something lovely that happens about that not only is that connecting to nature in another way, but by then you're kind of all stood in a circle or sat in a circle, depending on the group, and begin to share, or invited to share, and there's no obligation, each person's experience of the session, and inviting to share any gratitude that they would like to, you know, to towards nature or to themselves. You know, I always remember actually one lady at the end of that actually just wanted to thank herself for coming, and I thought it was beautiful. So it's a really nice way of kind of, I guess it's summing up the session and reinforcing what that's done for each person. So hopefully they can take that away with them and practice that in their own time. But there's also this wonderful thing that happens that I didn't really realize until I started lead sessions, of you realize how the groups become so connected through that shared experience. Even if they've not, you know, you talked a whole awful lot or shared a whole awful lot, there's this thing that seems to happen that connects all those individuals from those couple of hours. And, you know, I don't want to get too happy clappy, but it's almost like this sort of shared love and compassion as they've all connected to themselves and to the nature around and then shared that with each other. And it's so simple, but again, it just reminds me of what, you know, I think this human existence is perhaps meant to be all about, really, is, you know, connecting to each other as well. The act of being sat round with a cup of tea is actually really a powerful one, and a really lovely way to finish it off as well. But
I think that, I suppose, on the sessions themselves as well, it's stripping away everything that an individual arrives with. And for me, that's, you know, relationship is so important to our existence. We are social creatures. You said earlier, it's that tribal aspect. And when you strip away all of the nonsense and the baggage that we often carry around with us, we can then really connect we're giving ourselves the opportunity to really connect with another human being. And I suppose that's the essence of any long-term relationship that we have. It's the individual knowing or connecting on a depth that we wouldn't do in other relationships. And that opportunity to do that is one that I think we should all embrace and try and find time for.
Definitely. And there's something about that acceptance as well, which I kind of emphasize in the session, that it's okay for everyone to be whatever they need to be in the session. And as I said before, everything is optional. So if someone doesn't feel that they want to partake in a particular activity, that's absolutely fine. And I think because that creates an atmosphere of acceptance for each individual, I think then whether people know it or not, and I'm kind of thinking aloud because I guess I haven't thought about this too much in words, is I think everyone then accepts each other as to exactly where they're at. So by the end of it, again, there's a sort of a deeper bond with that, or a deeper connection, because I think there's a lot of judgment has been released. And as much as we might like to think we're non-judgmental, most of the time, I think we kind of are. And it's a pretty rare thing to walk into a situation where there's complete acceptance. And I think that makes a real difference to someone's experience as well, if it's only just for a couple of hours.
Yeah. So Ruth, what about some of the, and again, I don't want this to sound too westernized again, and it be sort of corrupted by it become a clinical or intervention as such, but the open spaces or the forests, are there specifics around where and how you can forest bathe?
Good question. I think you know, even with the question you said about not being too westernized, I think at the end of the day we are here in the West, and there are certain perhaps rules or permissions or logistics that we have to negotiate around, and there's no point sort of pretending otherwise, really. So anyone can forest bathe anywhere, and it doesn't even have to be a forest. It really, the practice is about nature connection and connecting to yourself.
Okay.
But of course, the tradition of forest bathing itself is by some trees, but it doesn't even necessarily have to be some big forest. It could just be a small plot of land with some trees, and equally it can be adapted. There is, of course, more power the bigger the forest and the types of trees that are out there that can do for you, potentially, both on a mental level, but actually on a pure physical level. There are chemicals that trees release, especially certain trees called phytoncides, which are part of the tree's a natural immune system. When we breathe them in, then that can also be beneficial for us and our respiratory system and our immune system too. So there's, you know, the logistics there. You know, as far as the way that I run my sessions, I've been lucky to work with some local organisations like Essex Wildlife Trust and the National Trust up at Hatfield Forest, and as well as Essex County Council. And I have always not only ensured that I work with those landowners, but also, you know, make sure I get permission and all of that, but also to try and help spread the word to different people that may or may not have heard about it, and give them access to the practice if they want to try it. But through that, because I've done it in quite a few different locations, it's meant that I realised that you can kind of do it anywhere. And of course, the quieter the woods, with the less other people coming through, the easier. But equally, you know, Hatfield Forest, this huge, beautiful, ancient forest with incredible old veteran trees, is still under the flight path of Stanford. And it turns out that certain times of the day, that's quite loud. And I remember the first time I led a session there thinking, oops, I didn't really think about this. And then realizing actually it's okay, because there's an element of acceptance and learning with that. And, you know, when we're stood or sat doing a sound meditation, you know, with eyes closed and really paying attention to what we can hear, when the planes come over, well, that's a wonderful thing to acknowledge, rather than try and pretend to get it perfect or, you know, as a guide for my session, but actually to acknowledge that as that happens, and to even relate that to the different thoughts that come through our minds, you know, that the intrusive thoughts that when we're, you know, perhaps trying to meditate, for example, and then you suddenly remember what you've got to do later that day. The plane is that perfect example for that in a way, and letting it pass and acknowledging it and knowing that it will go. And so that taught me a lot as a guide, and hopefully then participants can use that if they wish to as well. Is, you know, I can be in the middle of the woods, and then a, you know, a lovely friendly dog can come up and say hello to I don't know, some people going by on horses, or some kids screaming, and that's all okay, because that's life. So I think that's been wonderful, both on a personal level for me to learn as a guide, but again, for any participants anywhere. So I guess my answer is you can kind of do it anywhere as long as you're safe and feel comfortable. But equally, I guess the benefit of going on a guided session is you've got someone who knows the way, that will keep an eye on the time and the path for you, so you don't have to worry about getting lost, or you can really switch off everything, switch off your phone, you know, stop looking at your clock and your watch, and just really immerse as much as possible. So yeah, and interestingly, I have a colleague, a fellow guide, who is based down in Kent, and I know she's run a few sessions even in inner city London. And how she's done that is kind of to go through the different streets and find pockets of nature, you know, the little parks, the very little squares, and taking perhaps, you know, different corporate groups out, and just still letting them know there are ways they can do it. And out in Japan, they did the same thing. In their research, they compared a typical sort of session in the invites in an urban environment versus being out in a green outdoor space. And there were still benefits in the urban environment, not as much as being out in the forest, not as much as being in the green space. But there still are little benefits there, which still, I guess, comes back to that practice of, just as we were saying, taking those 5 minutes, 10 minutes can still make a difference. Of course, the more you do and the more you're out in nature, the better and bigger difference. But it still doesn't mean that just taking 5 minutes looking out the window is pointless either. So, yeah, sort of interesting to ponder on that, I guess.
It is, yeah. It's funny you mentioned London. I was there yesterday, and it was quite a stressful day, and I sort of came off deviated off the beaten track and walked into this amazing garden, you know, sort of quite wild in areas and landscaped in others, and I felt my sort of stress levels just drop, and I could feel my breathing change, and I just wanted to remain there for a little bit longer. And from walking through one gate one side and coming out the other, the difference was quite intense, quite measurable, really. So. And as you say, that some individuals are not perhaps blessed with having an expanse of nature on their doorstep, but we can find those small opportunities to reconnect with self. Now,
it's something
when
I'm
you...
really aware of. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, no, please go on, Ruth. Sorry, do you know what? As we're speaking, I said to you off air, didn't I? My brain populates with all of these different directions and questions that I want to ask, and I get too carried away with myself. No, please go, Ruth. Sorry.
No, me too. I get passionate and want to say more, but no, I was very aware of all of that, especially at the beginning of lockdown. When, you know, people were particularly stuck in situ, and I was really aware that whilst, you know, certainly as a nature connection guide, there are different things that I could share to perhaps maybe help people that might resonate with some people. And some fellow guides were offering online forest bathing and things like that, which is absolutely wonderful. What really bore down on my brain and shoulders a little bit was just that awareness that some people just don't have access to a green space. And I really started to try and, you know, do just a little project and sharing of finding, you know, like little plants in the cracks in the pavement or little ferns growing out of the walls.
Wow.
And just really trying to remind people that they can do that. And actually that became a game in itself for me, that when I went out for a walk, for my daily walk, I would, you know, actually be hunting down the nature in different points in the concrete. And I thought that was a wonderful way, again, perhaps for myself, actually, to find myself being in the present and the here and now and kind of having a bit of fun with it, but hopefully then might have helped some other people too. And yeah, just sort of, again, that reminder that there are little things that you can do. Of course, it's not the same as going and sitting in the park, even, let alone the woodland. But and there's something that happens when, and certainly in forest bathing, some of the invitations become quite playful. It almost brings you back to what it might have been like as a child, if you were lucky enough, you had to spend time out in nature and getting dirty and jumping in puddles and not really caring. So even the act of sort of walking along the pavement and finding more bits of nature, you know, taking over or poking out a crack was actually almost like a childlike game. And I think that's quite a healthy thing to be doing as an adult as well.
Yeah, I like the sound of that, actually. And also the metaphorical or the symbolic nature of it in, you know, that little fern or greenery peeking out from the cracks and the crevices, you know, those are extreme or adverse positions, but still there is life that's growing in that. That's a wonderful opportunity for individuals that are maybe city-based that can't access the green spaces to let me what did I write down, what did you say, let me find it, hunting down the nature. Yes, that I love that, hunting down the nature. And again, something else that we can all do. I was going to ask about your sessions and the obviously the practices themselves will very much, I'm assuming, remain the same. The walk of the bathing session, does that change or will you follow the same route?
It does depend. Because I've been working, or most of last year I was working in quite a few different locations, I would most of the time stay to the same route in each of those locations so that I knew what I was doing, really. To begin with. But also I kind of would tailor the sequence of invitations to the space. So the sequence of invitations would change depending on the location. And now during this summer, I spent a lot of time at one particular woods near me. And so that's changed quite a lot. And it will depend on the group, perhaps the season, perhaps what's going on, or because I will always go and check out the route beforehand and check if there's been any changes, even on a health and safety level, if the trees come down or anything like that. And that's been really interesting. But what I really like is that I kind of, the sequence of invitations, there's a science to it as to the sort of gradually bring you deeper and deeper into that rest and digest, but still being able to adapt it to the land and what's happening. In that particular woods, there's some wonderful big wood ants' nests. So you can be walking along this path and having looked at the trees and the plants and whatever invitation you're on, and then suddenly stumble across this giant nest of all these ants, very busy. And that can be such a wonderful moment. And what I tend to do, my style is very much, I don't really point it out. I let people discover it. And as one person discovers it, then another person will, and seeing what conversation comes up from that. And it's always just so fascinating. And there's a I suppose if I'm honest, an absolute secret pleasure, because I kind of planned it in my head, but I wait and see what happens. And occasionally someone might not see it and I might not come up, and that's absolutely fine too. And there's certain invitations that might ask about considering our relationship with nature. So a lot of it's about what nature's giving us, but equally what we are giving to nature and how we affect nature. And often that will be on a part on the path that there might be some logs that have been cut down, perhaps for conservation reasons and actually helping nature. But again, that might create a talking point or a, you know, just a little consideration for people. So I always try and tailor it to suit the land, which in itself feels quite lovely, because it goes back to what the real premise is that I'm not the guide. I'm not the guru or the teacher. It's nature is the guide, really. Nature is the therapist, as it were, really. So tailoring the route, the invitations to the land, I think is again really then nature guiding us all, and I really like that.
And what's been, you know, I'm wondering, you must get quite different responses from participants that join a group or a one-to-one. Can it be you sort of touched on it earlier that there is a sense of thanking themselves, so in the circle at the end, can it be quite a strong emotional response some participants have?
Definitely, it can be a real mix, and I'm sort of careful about how I talk about this part, because I don't want ever to anyone to feel that it should be anything, but that said, there has been a real mix from every so often, perhaps a couple of friends or even a couple might come. I remember in particular a woman and a man. I think they were husband and wife, and the woman had booked it and brought her husband along. And at the beginning, he kind of came up to me sort of privately and just said, I don't really know why I'm here. I've just come to support her. You know, I have had a bit of anxiety going on, but I don't really know why I'm here. And you could feel there was quite a lot of resistance. I thought, it's absolutely fine, do whatever you feel comfortable. If you just want to end up just sitting or standing under a tree, that's absolutely fine. And there was this beautiful thing at the very end when he came up to me, he said, I just feel so much more relaxed and I'm just so surprised. And you could tell it in his body language and his voice and rhythm of speech. And it was lovely just noticing that maybe he might take that away with him, that might help him in the future. We've had some people sort of perhaps get quite emotional, perhaps sharing different things that have been going on for them, because it's giving that, because when you go into that rest and digest state, it's ultimately giving space to process some emotions. So it can bring up you know, just a few tears perhaps, or some memories even. Often the act, especially of the smelling and smelling, going around exploring that sense of smell, can bring up different memories. And people seem to really sort of, I don't know if enjoy is quite the right word, of course, but relish feel grateful for that space to be able to just have a few tears if they need to. You know, and it's not a therapy session. You know, I'm not there as a counsellor or a therapist, and that's very clear. And if anyone ever needs signposting to support, you know, I've got that knowledge and been careful to do the training where that was important. But equally, it's often just that sort of that space for someone just to have a little bit of a release, and a reminder of what they might want to go and do afterwards or take with them, or what they might want to do next for themselves. And then for some people, it's been just an interesting way of bringing them closer to nature. I have worked a couple of times with some people that work in conservation, who are out in nature all the time and feel quite connected and can identify, you know, all the birds and birdsong and, you know, a wonderful, wonderful sources of information about nature and passion about preserving it. And yet they will still say that at the end of the session, they hadn't experienced nature in that way, and that it's deepened their connection and their understanding of it, and they will take that with them. And there's something really lovely about that, I think, that then, I suppose for me, it's not about what I do. It's the practice and it's what nature does. I just facilitate that for people. And equally, it's not something that you have to come to regularly either. You know, you can just do it once and that could be enough. Of course, there's some benefits in coming regularly or coming to the same place throughout the seasons and learning from that and the change there, or just having that, as we said, it's so difficult to, even when we know that we can or need or should make time for ourselves, sometimes it's difficult to do that on our own. And when someone else is there guiding you through it, you tend to be able to do that or go deeper or commit to it. But equally, it is something, and I've always emphasized this, that you could just come to a session once and there might be things that you take away that might, you know, stay with you. I have another lady that, you know, regularly out walking her dogs. And so, you know, always out in nature. But after doing a few sessions with me, she has a now built into her dog walking routine just a short stop where she just stops and just is in nature as opposed to doing all the dog walking part. And all the dogs slow down with her as well, and they know and they sense from her. And so they all kind of sit in that rest state of just being for a moment. And I love that. I love that people are just taking little things with them that might just serve them well in their daily lives.
Yeah, it really is. Because even that, you know, walking the dogs becomes a task, doesn't it? A task driven, you know, the dogs must get walked. And so off you go on the same repetitive path, but stopping for that period en route enables you to connect again. You mentioned about, I found really fascinating that sometimes it's the sense of smell that provokes the emotional response. I found that really interesting. I suppose, again, because we're multi-sensory, you know, sensory creatures, sometimes when we connect with certain aspects, that's when it drives forward that response.
I think so. And I think smell is an interesting one. I think it's one that we don't always pay attention to a lot now, or when we do, it's very strong smells, you know, from perfumes and chemicals and strong smells. And a lot of people, when we begin the smell invitation, often feel like they can't smell anything at all. And I remind them that's perfectly okay, and it's quite a normal response, because it can feel like it's quite a subtle smell when you're out there, unless perhaps if it's rained and then you have this quite wonderful stirring up of smell of the woodland ground and the dirt. But it does seem to really, when people sort of have an exercise of people going around and collect smells in a pot or in their hands or something, and they start to be really surprised by how many different smells there are out there. We can sort of perceive that there's just a general woodland odour, and it turns out that, you know, different leaves can smell different, and even the trees can smell different, and different things you find on the ground, even stones can smell. And when they sort of collect, I think it's a combination of that accessing that smell that starts to really connect to memories, but also that act of collecting, that sort of gathering and collecting, which perhaps brings them back to childhood, and again the different memories that might come from that. And it's also it brings you very much in the present and the here and now again, because it does turn off that mind of all the other chatter. And when you do that, then emotions come up, and that's what often then makes us a little bit, if we are just sat and perhaps trying to meditate in a quiet room, when those emotions come up, sometimes that can be a bit too much, and so we block them out and go back to our busy minds, or actually I'm not going to sit here and meditate anymore, I'm going to go and clean or do the work I needed to do. Whereas when you're still in that smelling exercise or any of the sensory exercises, they're kind of perhaps, those emotions are being released and perhaps a little slower or perhaps just a little gentler maybe. And it's still fairly easy to be immersed in the activity that you're doing. So I think that just allows that steam to be released in a gentler way, rather than perhaps necessarily a giant pop and burst.
That makes sense. Which then from an emotional and psychological perspective becomes almost more manageable because there's that subtle delivery of it.
Yeah, I think so.
So I can really see the benefits of going more than once, that it becoming part of one's practice and what we offer ourselves. The other element to that is the seasonal part, as you mentioned. It must be totally different in terms of what we're absorbing and how we're connecting through the seasons. The other part I wondered was the time of the day. Do you deliver at different times of the day? Because I can assume that it must feel different temperature wise, smell different? I'm not sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, a lot of my sessions have tended to be a morning, a Sunday morning, just because that seems to fit with people's schedules. But I've done a few evening ones, and especially last year, I did quite a lot of sunset sessions up at Hatfield. Mm. From my own personal point of view, I absolutely loved those. There was something so wonderful about starting in the light and sort of going into the forest as it was getting quieter from the human sounds, but then all the different animals and birds start to come to life a little bit more as the humans have moved out, and then the insects all come out, so of course the birds are out, and it was a really interesting shift in atmosphere, and then finishing with a tea ceremony just as the sun's setting, and then even walking back to the car park, and everyone getting in their cars and doing this. It's a bit of a long drive out of Hatfield Forest, and you go through sort of bits of the forest and then the open fields, and they have some cows there, and there were rabbits, and there was one particular session that I just remember very clearly of getting to the exit and just having to stop my car and get out and look back and see, you know, the forest with a beautiful sunset. The sky was just incredible. There had been a rainbow as well, actually, because I think it had just rained a little bit. So it was one of the most magical experiences for me personally. But I just also thought, for all the participants, what an absolute show nature put on for them. And then to go home from that, and then perhaps have a restful, hopefully restful evening, and then going to bed with that, I think is just so beautiful. In the morning sessions can put people in a very restful state for the rest of the day. But, you know, inevitably, I'm sure things come up for people where they've got to, I don't know, make the lunch or sort the kids out or whatever else it is that they have to do in that day. So, yeah, the evening sessions are wonderful. And I mentioned that evening that I collaborated with Connor from Conscious Breath, where it got to the sun setting whilst we were around the fire. Everyone was laid down on the ground at that point. They brought all sort of blankets and mats with them. And then we had the bats flying overhead, and again, some quite beautiful special moments. But equally, an early morning session could be quite wonderful as well. I've only done a couple of those, but there's something wonderful about, the bird song in the morning and being up before everybody else. And so I think, I suppose the answer to the question is yes, definitely. Each time of day can be so different and bring you different gifts, and equally, each day can be different. And yes, each season can be different. And I love that as a guide because it teaches me to accept whatever comes, that I can't orchestrate it to be, again, what might be a perfect session as such, because everything in nature is imperfect, which makes it perfect. And I think that's a wonderful lesson, both as a guide and then as a human being, as a participant, really learning that about life too. And yeah, someone asked me the other day, what's my favourite time of day to do it? Or what's my favourite season to do it? But I can't really answer it because it all is.
Yeah. Well, as you said there, and what a word to use, a gift. And it is a gift. And I think that's the bit that we often underuse. We should always be looking to gift ourselves. I think that we get it skewed ever so slightly because we end up sort of, we said this throughout the show, but sort of overindulging, and what we believe are perhaps gifts to ourselves over consumption are actually not really gifts, and they're not helping us from a wholeness perspective, not helping us globally speaking. Whereas actually, the spontaneity of nature, the unpredictability of it, and being okay with that and being right with that is the gift in itself. Actually, you know, this lesson that it's teaching me is something that we can carry over in all areas. Ruth, we must play your second song. I'm kind of just, I almost want to do the show in the forest, you know. Now let's go to your next song choice. Stick with us here on Phoenix FM and the Happiness Algorithm. Trying to say too many words all at once. I'm James Rose. My special guest today is Ruth Mortimer, and this is her second song choice.
Phoenix FM.
Welcome back to the Happiness Algorithm with me, James Roast. That was my guest Ruth Mortimer's second song choice. That was Towards the Sun by Bird Talker. Ruth, a lovely song there.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I sort of accidentally discovered Bird Talker through another one of their songs called Heavy. I think it was possibly down the rabbit hole of YouTube or something like that. But this song particularly, I really thought was quite relevant, quite lovely. They shared on their Facebook page when they released it. I love the messages that they spread both in their songs and how they communicate. But on their Facebook post when they shared this song, when they released it, they were talking about healing and dealing with anxiety and bringing in self-compassion and realizing that sometimes on that healing journey, we can be quite harsh on ourselves to get better, to be better. And actually bringing in that self-love and compassion and realizing that it's not necessarily a quick or easy or even a pretty journey, but, you know, just kind of taking a bit of time, taking deep breaths, taking a walk outside and perhaps even finding a bit of joy and just turning towards the sun a little bit sometimes, you know, no matter where you are and bringing in that joy and awe, which kind of, I think, fits with everything maybe we're talking about.
It really does. Joy is someone said to me the other day, sometimes it's about seeking out joy as opposed to just happiness, that we have a greater opportunity to experience a sense of joy more frequently than what we consider happiness to be. And that's hence why the show is the Happiness Algorithm. There is no sort of code or data input that can create it. We can't sort of fabricate happiness as such. It's a coming together, but we have a greater opportunity to experience joyful moments. And it is everything that we've been speaking about today, distilling it down, simplifying it, bringing it down to those sort of primary textures, to be able to experience, you know, that growth within the cracks, that you said earlier. Ruth, we must share, because I'm sure, in fact, I know that there will be people that will want to be bathing from the moment they stop listening and you know, book into a class. So please share with us sort of social media handles, websites, how people can hear or read more about you and sort of forest bathing.
Sure, yes. So you will find me, Forest Clouds Nature Therapy, on Facebook and Instagram, both Forest Clouds Nature Therapy. I do occasionally remember to hop on Twitter, but I don't tweet very much, but I'm there. And my website is forestcloudsnaturetherapy.co.uk. And I have a couple of sessions coming up in October, November, although they are fully booked now, so I'm going to have to try and come up with some more dates, really. I was sort of slowing it down a little bit just to sort of see how things were going, but it's been lovely. There's been lots of people in touch. So definitely, if you hop on any of those social media or website to follow me, don't despair. I'll definitely be announcing more dates. But I can also do private group sessions, family sessions, or one-to-one sessions as well. So I would just say to anyone who's interested, just, you know, follow or send me a message and yeah.
I urge everybody listening to get in touch. Certainly follow what you're doing as well. If they're not sort of local to where you practice, then do get in touch and ask. So what you can do and what sort of Ruth advises, really.
Well, yeah, and there's guides all around the UK as well. So if someone's listening who isn't local to Essex, it's not convenient, still feel free to get in touch, and I might be able to connect you with someone who is more local and nearby that does something similar.
Absolutely. What should people start with, do you think, Ruth? What would be your top tip to begin?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, there's something that is talked about in forest bathing called a sit spot. And that is a little spot in nature that I suppose traditionally is sitting, hence the name, but you could do it lying down, standing, or whatever you like. But perhaps creating that little, it's like almost like your little safe refuge, your little spot. And that could be in a garden, that could be perhaps under a tree on the street somewhere, or a local park, or out in the woods or the mountains or wherever you are. And actually perhaps just regularly visiting that. You can just sit even just for 5-10 minutes. And when you're there, almost treating it almost like a little bit like a temple, really, or a church or a sacred spot or whatever that means for you. So perhaps putting everything else away, perhaps turning your phone off or just on silent. Again, it only has to be for 5 minutes. And just perhaps running through the senses, you know, so, you know, maybe even closing eyes if you feel safe to do so. And things like what you can hear, and then opening eyes, what you can see, perhaps taking a breath, what you can smell, perhaps even opening the mouth, drawing the air in, and what you can taste on the air. And then even what you can feel, perhaps if there's the sun on your face or the rain or the wind, or even using your hands to the ground around you or the trunk of the tree. So just almost just taking this short bit of time to sort of run through your senses without anything else going on, and just seeing how that feels. And then you can return to that spot. You know, there's something that can be quite beautiful if you keep returning, even if that's just once a month, to seeing how that feels and what you notice and what changes you might notice and observe. And, you know, what can happen as you do that, you start to build a relationship perhaps with that area, or if it's under a tree, with that tree, and you start to maybe notice things that you might not have done before. And even that little practice in itself can just be enough.
A sacred space, a sit spot, and you mentioned earlier in the show about a sort of sense of ceremony with the tea offering at the end, and I think that there's something in that. I remember listening or reading something many years ago about the fact that we're losing a sense of ceremony in our life. And I think that opportunity to connect and be present and find that sit spot and protect it is crucial. Yes, wonderful. Well, Ruth, if I may, I'm going to share with you what I've taken from today's show, and there's loads, absolutely loads, and I'm sure I'm going to miss a lot as well. But I think that some of the bits that really struck me are that nature doesn't ask very much of us. That, you know, connecting with nature allows us to access our organic human self. It enables us to bring compassion to ourselves. This is a big one for me, that recognizing within nature things come and go, and that sort of cyclical process is crucial. And so therefore, when we are in crisis, it's trying to tap in and connect with that and recognize that it will pass. As a society or as an individual, let's start at an individual level, sometimes it's a change in attitude. Sometimes it's a change in attitude that we have to recognize and connect with self. In the current climate, we've almost disconnected with our sense of humanness. So going back to basics and being in nature reminds us of how we should be. Broadly speaking, in all areas of our life, only take what we need. Rest and digest. Yeah, I'm going to be using that one definitely, because in the sit spots that we create, that we can rest and digest. And something very poetic that you said earlier, it's about creating a sort of or recognizing our rhythm of life. And I think that, you know, we can begin to determine or shift or shape or write a new rhythm that we move with or to. I know there's loads. Those are the bits that I just highlighted through my notes. I've got two pages worth, which I will go through. But Ruth, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I knew the conversation would be one that I already feel much calmer sitting and speaking with you. So it's been a joy.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Every time I have a conversation such as this, it just reinforces what nature can do. And I suppose all I wanted to add really to it in your wonderful summary of it all was, whilst nature doesn't ask much of us when we're out there, of course, as we connect to it, the more inclined we are to protect it, and the more we realise how important it is for our well-being, then hopefully the more we will look after it. And that's where it does ask something of us, is to perhaps just move to protect it that little bit more.
Well said. Very, very well said. And I couldn't agree with that more. I think that's so true. There's a respect that then we can, and a better relationship we'll have with it through realizing what it does give us. So Yes, well, I'm afraid Ruth has to leave us there, but you are, as you know, stuck with me till 3 o'clock. It's been a joy to share this conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Ian Lee will be joining us at 3 o'clock for the Drive Time show. But as always, and I do promise, it'll be less nattering from me and much more music in this final part of the show. Stick with us here on Phoenix FM. I've been James Rose. I'll still be James Rose. And this is the Happiness Algorithm. I wish my guest, Ruth, all the health and happiness she deserves going forward. Next week, we will be joined by another great guest and more great music choices. But we'll be here till 3.
Trees are singing along with me. I'm just looking for happy sunrise. Lights my smiley face clock, sliding in my socks. I pour my first cup of tea. I'm just looking for happy. If you open your heart, you will see there's a million little opportunities to be looking for happy, looking for happy. Have magical fights as the rain taps so tepidly. I'm just looking for happy. In the sand, your head on my shoulder, drinking the moment the sun falls into the sea. I'm just looking for happy. Yeah, I'm just looking for happy.
Phoenix FM.